When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yo, 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 this is Stephen USSR Robinson on Powerful.tv, a big fight weekly for a special fight at Focus with Chris and Stu. Tune in. Boom!
A warm welcome. This is episode 35 of Big Fight Weekly on Powered4.tv. But we've got a special doubleheader today with myself, Stuart Palmer, and Chris Hume, my cousin and co-host. And it is a special fight of focus with none other than one of the hottest prospects on the UK scene at heavyweight, Mr. Steve USSR Robinson, all the way from Newcastle, from the Tune, our special guest today.
Chris, you all
right? How are you doing, matey?
All good, mate. We appreciate you sparing the time, Steve, coming on. We know you're busy training. You've got a lot on. And, I think the best place to start with this, Steve, is your recent win on the Boxer card at the Utilita Arena up in Newcastle. What a fantastic display. Reece Barlow was very game, though, wasn't he, Steve?
Yeah, definitely, which played into my hands. I mean, The minute Reece said at the press conference in the way, and the minute he said he was coming out to fight, I just, you know, that was perfect for me, because when you come across a negative fighter, you become negative. And, you know, when you come across somebody who just goes on the back foot and becomes a negative fighter, I think it brings the worst out of you. So for Reece come out and, you know, he come to fight and it played into my hands.
Chris, he caught you with a good one at the start, didn't he? Just with a check hook in the first couple of minutes of the first round. Yeah. How did that feel? Did he have any power?
Listen, he's a heavyweight boxer. You know, 16 and a half stone man. It's if he caught us flush, I would have felt it. But I think, you know, what shots may look flush on TV, I think, you know, you just have to look at Joe Joyce and Dubois. And I think people thought Joe Joyce was getting called flush, but, you know, we're trained day in, day out to ride shots. And what might look flush on the TV catching you, you know, you're sort of taking the blunt of the punch by bobbing or weaving or, you know, catching it on your shoulder or catching it at the end. So, as I say, what looks flush on TV, it's very different when you're in the ring. It doesn't feel as flush.
Well, we'll talk about flush, because your finish, mate, in that fight was flush, because it was like a swooping uppercut and it sort of flung him to the side of the corner, you know, and pretty much made him fly. Dead impressed with that. And it's the first fight, obviously, I've seen you fighting. Obviously, Stuart sort of brought your attention to me. I was just dead impressed with you. You were a big, big guy. You know, and we see the likes of Tyson Fury and, you know, you see, you sort of, your type now is you guys can move fast with your height. I'd like to say I was dead impressed with your speed and your footwork as well to go along with that finish, because the finish was sublime.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's funny, because I went back to the corner and I actually thought it was the left hook that knocked him out. I can't even remember coming back with the right hand. I can remember slipping. What we're working on, what I'd been working on, was to slip and high that left hook. And I remember slipping a shot and high on the left hook. And I went back to the corner and I says, was it the left hook? And Mark says, me coach, he says, no, you come back with the right hand. And until I've watched it back, I can't even remember sort of, you know, working. But we'll work every day on kinetics. I mean, Mark's a massive, massive believer of you know, kinesiology and making sure that whatever shot you hold, something naturally comes back. So if you're holding the left uppercut, the right hand comes back. If you're holding the left hook, the right hook comes back, or the right uppercut. And, you know, it's never one shot unless you're getting your distance and you're jabbing. There's never one shot. There's always something coming back. And Mark and Giuseppe, my coaches, are a big believer of, as I say, you know, the kinetics of your body and how naturally something comes back. So, it, you know, when I've watched it back, it worked well and it landed flush. And like I say, fair play to VC come out to fight and good on him.
Steve, I was going to ask you as well, being at the utility there, you know, your home city, your hometown, what was going through your mind, you know, being up there in Newcastle for the fight? How was that? And now, obviously, you know, COVID, you know, lessening and being in front of, you know, thousands and thousands of people. What was going through your mind on the way to the ring, you know, and post-fight as well?
Yeah, I had 44 amateur fights and I lost six of them on a split decision. And I was always a slow starter because of how relaxed and laid back. I mean, Mark, my coach, he'll force us to warm up. I'll be sitting in the change rooms with me with some One Direction or something on my headphones, just listening to some...
It's a bit different.
Acoustic music, and Mark will be like, Stephen, how have we got an hour? We need it. And for me, it was a dream. It's surreal. Like, I still have to pinch myself every day to realise that that's what I've done. But when it comes to nerves and when it comes to, you know, did I let the atmosphere get a hold of us? It's hard to explain because, like, on the Monday, people were coming up to us in the gym and people were coming up to us in the street and they were saying, oh, you must still be up to height. And I was like, you know, if I worked at T-Mobile and I made 10 iPhone sales in a day and I made me quarter for the month, would I be up to height Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? It's for me, it's work. It's not a hobby. It's work. It's a lifestyle. So although it was, you know, it was a blessing, and what happened was a great buzz. At the same time, come Monday, it's back on to work towards my next one. And as I say, work's work, and regardless of what you do at work, you know, you make a sale or you do something well at work, you just get back in and make the next sale and work on. What you've done wrong, what you've done well, and bind it all together to go to the next one.
Absolutely. Now, you said, obviously, you know, it was a devastating KO, but I've heard from you in interviews and stuff after, you're saying you want to showcase your technical side as well, because you can do that. So, yeah, just doing that style of boxing, maybe, you know, in the next fights. Yeah, I know you're like, you really want to show your technical side as well as your power.
It's been hard because I've had four fights now, and you know, three of them have been finished within a minute and a half. The third one was as I was saying earlier at the start of the live, was against Phil Williams, who is the most negative boxer I've never ever come across a boxer like it. And he got into my head because I was so frustrated and grabbing us. I was so frustrated and just backing up and covering up, and it really psychological. But it was a learning fight for us because, you know, I looked for the knockout. The knockout didn't come and I looked shocking. Like, if I watch that back, I look absolutely atrocious. And, you know, I know fine well, I've seen it in sparring. I know I've got a technical side to us. I know, you know, and that will come. And I don't read negative comments. I don't read comments. And, you know, my mom does, my friends do, you know, my family do. And the amount of negative comments of a fight that was on for a minute and a half, and his footwork's terrible. He's leading with his chin up. And you just think, how can someone justify commenting? I caught Reese with a check left hook. I think it was 39 seconds in. Now, I'm an analyst, you know, I'll go and I'll watch me fights back over and over and over and over again. And I'll sit and I'll write everything down of what was working, what wasn't working. But obviously, it's a minute and a half in. And I caught him with a check left hook, 39 seconds in. Now, a minute in, he spat his gum shield out and I hit him with a 1-2 to the body and I heard him wince. Then the gum shield went out. And listen, of course I seen red, I knew he was hurt. So yeah. The next 30 seconds was me going to knock him out. And you know, it was only 20 seconds after his gum shield come back in. I hire a big left hook, I miss him, and then the next one is the left hook and the right hook, which knocks him out. So for these people who are sitting behind the keyboard, listen, if Johnny Nelson or Carl Froch come up to us and said, listen, Stephen, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that, or somebody who's a connoisseur of boxing, an analyst of boxing, who comes up to us and tells us, listen, I'll hold my hands up and say fair play, I'll learn from it, I'll take it away. But when you've got these people sitting, you know, who are the same people who would probably sit and call him Anthony Joshua, you know, two-time world champion and a gold medalist, and sit and call him Tyson Fury and against Dr. Wallen when, you know, when he didn't fight his best. And the same people just seem to be popping up on everybody's, you know, they seem to be perfectionists while they're sitting eating a packet of Doritos with a can of Fosters in their hand.
But who drinks Fosters these days? I always thought
exactly them people who are writing on calling the Fosters. They're the type of people who are typing
dirty
Yeah, we Chris will tell you we have it with, you know, there's always negative in there, and as you say, it's just they've never boxed around in their life. They've never trained boxing. So I do, me and Chris, you know, we see it all the time as well as you see it. But, you know, I think, like, you've got to switch off from it, haven't you, I guess?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's in all walks of life, you know. You just have to look at that poor Jessie Nielsen from, you know, Little Mix. I mean, that, you know, when you watched her documentary and she was talking about taking our own life, and you just sit and you honestly, you're heartbroken by it. I think that the impact these... You know, without swearing, these D-heads have on people, without
swear
even
away, mate. You can swear, mate. Don't worry about that.
It really is unbelievable that they don't take any consideration of what they're doing to the mental health of the people, you know. And they're the same people that have probably been sharing posts of Caroline Flack and of Mike Thiasis.
Yeah,
you know, these people who have taken their own lives because of mental health, they'll have been sharing, you know, to get behind them. And then, you know, in the next breath, they're sitting typing, he's shit, he's this, he's that, he's footwork, he's this, he's that, he's slow, he's... And you just think, why even But listen, everyone's due an opinion, but I don't think anybody can take an opinion from a minute and a half fight from when I had him hurt 39 seconds in. And as I say, you know, I knew the stoppage was coming. As soon as the gum shield come out, as soon as I heard him wince, I knew that you know, that stoppage was coming in the next minute.
Sorry, Chris, because I've asked a few questions. So, yeah, I'm sure you've got plenty to ask, Steve.
Well, I obviously, she's probably well informed. I'm the mixed martial arts side of things, so I know you don't know enough about UFC to have a conversation now. But where did you start? You know, obviously, we'll get into you playing football in Hong Kong, but, you know, what made you make the switch from, say, playing football in Hong Kong to becoming a professional boxer?
So I come back from Hong Kong in 2014. It was January the 8th, 2014, I come back off the back of, I had snapped the ligaments in the ankle four or five times. And there's a martial art, funnily enough, as you speak about martial arts, there's a my coach, he's a recognised martial art, he owns something called Hung Sao Do, which is he's called Giuseppe Bavona. I mean, you can research him. He's a seventh dan in Hung Sao Do. That's his own recognised martial art. And I've knew Giuseppe for years. And I started speaking to him, and he says, "Oh, come down the local boxing club." He's also the boxing coach at Vision, where I box now. And Mark, me manager and second boxing coach, he owns Vision. And I went down just because I ballooned up to 135 kilo after playing football sort of at a high standard from the age of 17. The weight just flew on as I'd done nothing for 6 months as I recovered from an injury. So I walked down the gym in February at 135 kilo, and by July I had my first fight. My first fight, I was 132 kilo, and I stopped the guy in the first round. And I remember it was at Bishop Auckland Social Club, and it was against a traveller. And I remember the atmosphere and, you know, the whole buzz of it. I just thought, wow, this is unbelievable. Like, and I've always had a winning mentality. I remember whenever we lost for football, the lads would be out in the pub drinking, and it used to piss us off that they would be enjoying themselves. And I used to think, how can you, we've just lost a game, 4-0, or whatever we've lost, or, you know, and you were talking about where he's going tonight, and, you know, where we're going tonight, are we going to One Try, or we're going to downtown Moncot, and I'm sitting thinking, I don't understand it. And from walking into a gym, I knew after that first fight, that was it. And I've never picked up an alcoholic drink since. I've sacrificed so much. I've sacrificed stag do's, holidays, birthdays. I've lost relationships. I've lost friends off the back of it. And from July 2014, my first amateur fight, I think I've pretty much been in a 7-year camp where I've just said, right, that's it. You know, I'm giving it me all, and I've done that, and I've thoroughly enjoyed the ride, and you know, it's what I've achieved in within sort of, let's say 5 years, because COVID's been 2 years, so
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I've been boxing 7 years. I walked into a gym 7 years ago, but let's say 5 years I've been competing for, and you know, I'm a massive believer of anybody in all walks of life, whether it be work, whether it be, you know, whether it be to join a team, join any sport, anybody can do anything if they've got the right mindset and the right people around them. And I think if you've got negative people around you, you become negative. And if you've got people telling you can't do this, you can't do that, you won't do this, you won't do that, I think you won't do it, you can't do it. You believe in what they're saying. Whereas if you've got positive people around you and the right mindset, I think anybody can achieve anything. I really do.
Good mindset to have that, you know, in life in general. And then, you know, obviously with your boxing, no, good words there, Steve. Chris, I got another question for Steve before I ask the next one.
I'm seeing a load of comments here for you, Steve.
Fire them up, absolutely.
All right, T.O. I'll start from the beginning.
Okay.
We'll go with Pete Layton's got, well, had the first comment.
So hello, Pete. You've been viewing us now for quite a while. Good to see you. So, yeah, all right, lads. Hope you're well. Question for Steve. How does he fancy his chances against Delboy or Dillian? Also, if he continues knocking out opposition fast, does he feel he could earn a title? Good question that, Pete. So, yeah, Steve.
Isn't, you know, the thing is with boxing, it's like anything, you know, it's like, You see upsets in, you know, and let's look back at football. You see upsets in the Carling Cup. You know, you might see somebody like Blythe Spartan beating Blackburn. You might see somebody like Leighton Orient, you know, getting a draw against Man City. And it's the same as boxing. You know, you've got levels like you have at football, but there's upsets. It's heavyweight boxing. You know, the thing is with boxing, you need to once you're there. You there's no coming back down. Once you come back down, you've got to keep rising, and you've got to keep going up. And listen, people will criticize me for taking the Rhys Barlow fight on, and digressing a little bit from this question. I boxed 44 amateur fights within the space of 4 years. Then I turned professional in September. I boxed my first fight October, my second fight in December, my third fight March the 1st. COVID hit March 15th. Mm. So I boxed 47 times within 5 years. So I haven't boxed for 18 months, which is why I took the Rhys Barlow fight. As I say, people might criticise me for taking that fight and think, well, he's took a step back. Yeah. You know, listen, it's heavyweight boxing. There's no step forward. There's no step back. Anybody that steps through that ropes is a warrior, is a Spartan. And they deserve the same amount of credit as the person who's 40, you know, 1 to 4. I was 1 to 40 to beat Rhys Barlow. You know, 1 to 40. Yeah, that is, man, absolutely crazy. Why? It's heavyweight boxing. That's like mental. That's crazy odds at the bookmakers. But at the same time, take nothing away from Rhys. He come out fighting, and you know, Delboy and Dillian, two fantastic fighters. You know, Dillian White deserves a title shot. Delboy, you know, he's had some bad losses, and did he lose against Usyk? I would have liked to have seen that rematch. I think Delboy deserved that rematch. I think they're two fantastic boxers, and if I'm going to speak the truth, I don't think I'm at that level yet. I'm still, you know, I'm still three fights into my pro career. Four fights in. One fight went the distance, which was shit, which I can't even look at. So let's talk about three fights. Okay. I've technically boxed. In them three fights, I boxed 1.5 rounds. I boxed for 4.5 minutes. You know, I've gotten early knockouts, but is that going to come as I step up? Of course it's not. You know, as I was saying earlier, people learn to ride shots, people take, you know, I know that's not going to come, and that's when I'm going to have to box. And I know I've got that side, and I know I've got that ability. But have I got that for 10 rounds? No, of course I haven't, because I've never experienced. Yes, I've sparred 10 rounds, but listen.
Yeah, but it's different in an actual rounds, fight, isn't it? Yeah.
Sparring 10 rounds in a gym where, you know, you go your own pace and you've only got four people watching you, to sparring 10 rounds in front of 13,000 booing and chanting and the atmosphere, and it's so different. So, you know, I've got a fantastic team around us. I've got great sparring, and, you know, I do see myself getting to that level within the next 12 to 18 months, 100%. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. But if I was to step into a ring now with Dillian or Del Boy, hold me hands up, I don't think I'd beat them. I've got a puncher's chance.
Absolutely, you have.
I don't piss on his lands. I'm picking up. that's that. You know, that's not me being a dick, being big headed. That's not me bragging. I know fine well I carry power. You know, I'm naturally 10% body fat and 17.5 stone. So, you know, that's my natural weight. I can't get any, you know, lighter than what I am. And I can get heavier, but this is a natural man. This is my natural, you know, size. So I know I can put anybody to sleep. But as I say, stepping into a ring, I think, you know, I don't think I'm ready for that challenge as yet. But listen, ask us that question in 12 months and I'll more than happy fight then. But as I say, to talk about now, and as for the question about if I keep getting early knockouts, is the title going to come? That's up to Boxer and Sky Sports. But hopefully, I've said I want to fight for a title in four or five fights, definitely.
Thanks for your question there, Pete. Chris, what else have you got from the viewers? He's got a good one. I sense a good one here.
Well, it's Brett, so you know what's coming to you.
Brett comments every week, Steve. He's a huge fan of the Paul brothers. He loves the Paul brothers. He loves what they stand for. So, yeah, hiya, Brett. What does Steve think about the Pauls being involved with boxing? Who wins, Tommy Fury or Jake? And have you heard Mike Tyson Logan could be next February? So, yeah, he's just encapsulating what the Pauls are doing, you know, in terms of social and what the media are doing. So, yeah, your thoughts, Steve?
I think it's for me as a boxing fan and a boxer, it's great, because they're bringing in people that might never have watched boxing before. You know, he gets a million views on his YouTube channel, so they're a million people. There might have only been, you know, 250,000 actually enjoyed boxing, so he's getting another 600,000 people coming to support boxing. So for me, you know, is it dangerous? Yeah, it's dangerous. You know, he's fighting these people who, but between them, but the fighting exhibition fights, and you know, I think the whole Tommy Fury thing. I think Tommy Fury, you know, he hasn't really fought anybody as a professional yet, and you know, people criticise him for going on Love Island and loving himself and having the body he's got. But listen, the kid's been around the fighting family since he was born. He knows nothing different. He was probably in a barrel of hay when he was, you know, 6-year-old fighting with his neighbour who they had beef with. This is just the way they're brought up. And no, has he boxed at the highest of levels that he could have? No, but is he probably a very technical boxer? And has he got the right mindset, and has he got the right people around him with John and Tyson and, you know, all the others? 100%. And I think he'll be far too experienced for is it Jake or Logan he's meant to be fighting?
Jake, I might have to interject with you though there, Steve, that just because of, you know, watching, unfortunately, watching enough Jake Paul fights now. I think with Tommy Fury, is he doesn't have the same footwork as his brother, and I know you can't really class them as the same because you know one you know everyone's different. I just think as well as I think Jake Paul's antics, and I think the pressure John Fury puts on him, and I said this to Shu off camera about saying, you know, if he loses to Jake Paul, he's going to retire him on the spot. And I think the pressure of if he loses, he has got to change his name for 12 months. I think it's a hell of a lot of pressure for a young lad against someone who can thrive off pressure like Jake Paul. I think that could be a problem for him in this fight where he's going to feel that pressure. And I think he might struggle against Jake Paul, not in the boxing aspect, but I just think as the whole level of pressure going into it.
At the end of the day, though, at the end of the day, though, the Furies know the Pauls hold the cards, don't they, Steve? In terms of, you know, the money that he can generate, he's never, you know, he might never possibly generate the amount of income off the back of fighting him. Sorry, I jumped in then. But yeah, just to Chris has been very much for Jake Paul, haven't you? Whereas I'm a boxing purist. I want Tommy to do well. We kind of split me and Chris. But yeah, Steve.
It's not like I'm a big, massive fan of Jake Paul. I mean, it's the people he's fighting. I assume he's going to win because of, like, you know, Ben Askren, he fought, was never a striker in MMA. He was a wrestler. It had no stand-ups at all. So I knew that was going to happen. Tyron Woodley was one of them, but Tyron Woodley's been gun-shy for years when it comes to pulling the trigger. And when he did hit Jake Paul, he pulled away instead of going for it. And Tyron Woodley's like that. The Tommy Fury is just like... He did not impress me at all in this last fight against a Bellator bantamweight fighter, which he had the size over him as well. I know it's only four rounds, but he didn't look good, and his footwork, and he was getting caught with that. It was an overhanded right as well, and that just worries me going into a fight where it's high pressure, and someone who like Jake Paul who can take that pressure in and really give it. You know, I don't know. It just worries me in that situation.
No, I definitely agree. I think if the fighter's mindset, you know, going into a fight, isn't 100% on the ball, you just have to look at Tyson Fury against Klitschko in the whole way, in the whole press conference, the whole sit down. That man got into his. I think Klitschko threw about 48 shots in 12 rounds. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You look back and Tyson Fury had him beaten. Before he made David Haye quit twice, you know, because did David Haye have an injury? David Haye sitting out calling him out, saying he wants that fight. It's £1 million in the bank for the kid. Of course, he wants that.
He's got a problem with the Furies, though. David Haye, he's always going against Tyson Fury.
Yeah, but listen, money talks, and you know, if somebody rang me tomorrow and says, "Oh, Tyson Fury's Otto Wallen wants to fight you for £2 million. I'd take it tomorrow with a single training camp, no problem. But you know, David Haye is doing the right thing, calling him out. And if he gets £1 million in the bank, fair play to him. But like I say, going back to what we're talking about the mindset, and like you say, you know, is it in his head? And Has Tommy got the right mindset to go in there and take that pressure off him? And listen, Tommy loves his lifestyle. He's a millionaire off the back of Love Island, and
he's TikTok, absolutely,
and Instagram, and all this. And you know, he doesn't have to box. So that's another thing. You know, him sitting saying he's going to retire. Well, yeah, great. He retires, and then he's the next ASOS model. Molly May is the next. You know. What was Tickle Pink or whatever it's called, modern. they're making stupid money off the back of TikTok, stupid money off the back of Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. So, you know, that for me, they don't, he's sitting saying he's going to retire. Oh, great. His brother's a multimillionaire. His dad's probably not short of money. And he's making millions a year off the back of social media and, you know, opening clubs and traveling the world and going to Ibiza and Marbella and doing these daft club, doing an hour on the DJ booth for $100,000. And it's mind games leading up to the fight. But I think all Furies, and that's going to Huey as well. And I think all of them have got good chins, and You know, I think they've all got the right the fighting mindset off the back of the way they've been brought up. And you know, Jake and Logan, I don't think they've got that mindset. I think they've been brought up and you know with a lot of money and a rich family, and the probably only fight that they had in school, you know, was off the back of them being the rich kid. And it can go either way. As I say, anybody's got a fight, anybody's got a puncher's chance. But I just think Tommy's mindset and he's the fact he is a fighting man will sort of overstep the line to him. But listen, everyone's worthy of an opinion, and as I say, he's bringing in new fans, which is great. Both of them are bringing in new fans to boxing, and it gives people like me the opportunity to gain more following and more watchers who wouldn't necessarily have been watching 2 years ago.
Absolutely.
No, I totally agree with you.
What else we got, Chris?
There's one from Dan here.
Oh, hello, Dan. Yeah, Dan, Terra Sports Inc. What does Steve think of some of the British boxing promotions or promoters like Eddie Hearn and Frank Warren? Obviously, you're with Ben Shalom. Boxer now, you know, the deal with Sky, which is huge. But yeah, your thoughts on Eddie Hearn and Frank Warren and how they promote and what they've been doing?
Listen, the millionaires off the back of what they've done over the years, do you know what I mean? And they've both done well. And I think Frank Warren with the way he gets the pull, like Daniel Dubois, for instance, he's now ranked WBO number one. I don't know how that come about after, you know, losing against Joe Joyce. And then the next thing, he's fighting for a WBO interim title off the back of that. And, you know, I think Frank Warren signs people, you know, promotes them for, you know, he didn't give Joe Joyce any gratitude to the back of the Daniel Dubois. All he was talking about was Dubois come back. And I'm thinking, Joe Joyce is your fighter and you're not giving him any. And this is Eddie Hearn done the same against Billy Joe and Canelo. All he was talking about was Canelo. And I'm thinking, Billy Joe's your fighter as well. Why are you not talking about him? Why are you not talking? You're giving him no public, you know, you're giving him nothing to. And I think that's the issue with promoters, you know, if they've got two fighters, they've always got a favourite, and, you know, are the push fighters forward. Look at Josh Kelly, you know, a local lad, and was he pushed too much? Was he pushed too quick off the back of anything? And they're soon quick enough to drop you like that.
Yeah.
You know, I remember going back to football. I remember being at Leeds Academy till I was 16. And I remember being told, David O'Leary was the manager at the time. And I remember him sitting with my dad. I was 14. And when I was 14, I was miles above everybody. And I hit 15, 16. And I sort of leveled off and people started to get higher. And, you know, it's 15, 16. I left school with no GCSEs. I was a little shit. I was naughty because in my head I was going to be the next, you know, England number one keeper, because that's the way that you're fed with shit, you're fed with lies. And that's not just football, that's in boxing, that's in all sports. And, you know, I turned 16 and they went, you either get a contract or they release you. And they said, bye-bye. And I'm sat thinking, fuck, I've got no GCSEs. I've been a little bad. I got kicked out of school. I've got nothing to fall back on. Where do I go from here? What do I do? And, you know, boxing's the same. They build you up. They put you in against someone. You then fall, then they throw you out. And you're sitting thinking, shit, I've put everything, I've put all my eggs into one basket, and now where do I go? Do I take the punch of going on ticket sales and fighting on small horse shows when last year I was fighting for a British title on a matchroom card? But because you've got too much pride and you don't want to do that, you just end up, you know, getting a 9 to 5 and something that you don't want to do. And this is when mental health kicks in, and this is when you don't know, you know. And I think them two are the worst for that. I really do. I think the build you up to kick you up the arse and throw you out. And it's you know, we sit and talk about mental health, and I think that's the worst thing for it, because once you've been there, you're back down there. They should be building you back up to there, you know, but they don't. They just say bye bye, and you know, a lot of fighters, and because there's only sort of three main promoters out there now with Sky Sports and Ben Shalom, Frank Warren, and Eddie Hearn. Unless you're saying, well, you know, you've got the likes of Al Siesta and stuff and Black Flash who are building up and taking your place and taking people places. But, you know, as a boxer, the dream is to sign with one of them three. And I'm in a fortunate enough position where I'm, you know, I've signed for them. But I think them two are really bad for building you up and throwing you away. And I think that's really, really, you know, I think it's a shame that happens. And you know, if you've lost a fight, there should be. But look, I'm just hoping, because I think Anthony Fowler's an absolute gentleman, and I really like him. And I seen he posted that he's stepping up weights. I just hope that Eddie Hearn sticks with him and gets him another good couple of fights, because he's got a lot to offer. And I want to, you know, I want to see, for me, I want to see everybody do well. And anybody else, I know the sacrifices every single person's making. And I messaged, you know, I done a post on Instagram wishing Reece Barlow the best of luck. And, you know, I hope he bounces back, and I hope he gets some wins on the back of his belt. And for me, as I say, I know the sacrifice every single person makes who steps through that ring. I know the 8 weeks camp, the sacrifices they make. I know the diet, and I know the, you know, the social side of things. So for me, I just want to see everybody do well, which is probably the reason why I don't sit and call people out, and I'm not going to sit and start telling such and such as a dickhead and I want to fight him, because that's just not me. Because for me, I think anybody who steps in that ring deserves the credit that they get.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, good question that, Dan. Sorry, Chris.
No, Steve, the way you're talking about it, you know, talking about Eddie Hearn and Frank Warren and all the obviously different organisations and you know, the different organisations that hold belts. Mid Shirt spoke about this plenty of times. Would you feel like the way that UFC do it, or just say mixed martial arts companies do it, you know, it's just one person or one company that runs the whole division set? Would you feel like boxing would be better if it was just that? Instead of having to go to A to B to C, you're in the UFC, you speak to Dana White and or Sean Shelby or whoever the matchmakers are, and it's just that one person. You're not having to, you know, jump here, jump there, go through all these different hoops, you know, to get a match or to sign up with someone to get into boxing.
I think it would work better, but at the same time, I don't think it would give the opportunities for, you know, the people lower. So talking back to when WWE was WWF, they had the European, the Intercontinental, and the heavyweight title, right? Three titles. You had your European and your Intercontinental, who was sort of the lower fight, as you know, the Al Snows, the Ken Shamrocks, and what have you, the Gold Dusts and all them. Then, you know, you stepped up to Vader, Kane, you know, to the middle ones, and then you step up higher again to your likes of Austin, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, what people watched boxing for, wrestling for. You know, people would go and pay £12 to watch Survivor Series, WrestleMania, for the likes of Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Triple H, The Generation X, Stone Cold. You know, you paid for them, you watched it for them, you stayed up at 1 a.m. to watch in your house, SmackDown versus Raw, SmackDown Raw, you stayed up to watch it. And you know, you knew what was coming. And for me, boxing's similar to that. Boxing, you know, you pay for the big fights. You don't pay for the 7-undercard fights, you pay for the main fight. But you sit and watch the 7-undercard fights and you enjoy it, and you know, you learn, and you watch it and you think, oh, well, actually, I like that kid. He's good. And I think for me, boxing should there's levels in boxing. And, you know, as you say, the UFC, you've got one belt, but does that give the amount, you know, you've got Bellator and you've got other sort of governing bodies springing off the UFC. And to get in the UFC, you've got to be the creme de la creme of mixed martial arts. So, you know, for boxing, I think could there be sort of you know, like a smaller show like Bellator is to UFC, and you like boxing, you've got Glory, and you know, you've got the other governing bodies. Could boxing have that? possibly, or could they just go down the route of there's three titles, there's the one for the people at the top who are ranked, you know, 1 to 6, and they've got to fight three times a year for. Listen, Mike Tyson was fighting 8 times a year, 10 times a year. Now some fighters are fighting once every 2 years. I don't get it. See, for me, crazy. If Ben Strong rang me tomorrow and says, right, you're fighting on the 20th of November, the 11th of December, the 28th of December, obviously injury permitted, I'd be like, perfect. Not because of the money. The money's irrelevant. Like, I'm talking about, because for me, that's where you learn. You can sit in the gym 8 hours a day. You can spar 20 rounds a week. But you're only going to learn from there. And, you know, I think there needs to be more fights happening for people to be able to build the way up and to get them titles. So, to your question, should it only be one belt? I don't think so, because I think boxing's a lot bigger than the UFC. There's a lot invested in it. Whereas, you know, I think looking at the wrestling side of things, I think there should be something like the Intercontinental, the European, the heavyweight, the best, the top 10, then, you know, the next, the middle, and then the people at the bottom. That's who they fight for. But these interim titles, they're talking about taking them away, because what do they mean? What, so Daniel Dubois in contention to fight Tyson Fury next? No, we know Dillian Wilder. So by having these interim titles, Cash Ali's the IBF interim, so what? He's next to fight Usyk. They mean nothing. You know, it looks good. It's great for sponsorships. It's great for you as a boxer. You've got this belt, and it's great for building you as a person, as a fighter. And it's great. It looks great. But when it comes to actually meaning anything in the boxing world, it doesn't. And it's unfortunate.
We have the same problem in the UFC, though. We've got one this weekend, Petr Yan versus Corey Sandhagen, because Aljo is injured, got neck issues, so they've moved that the fight Petr Yan versus Sandhagen as an interim title. See, I have this problem with interim titles. I don't like them. I think if you're the next in line for the title and you have to fight someone, then that's the number one contender fight. There shouldn't be any belts involved. So if you win that, you fight the champion. If you lose that, the person that beats you fights the champion. I've never been a fan of interim belts. I think the only way they would work, I'd say now for mixed martial arts standard, if the person who's the champion is out for an extended period of time, you know, with open circumstances, sort of injury, or you know, something's happened. Yeah. That's the only time they work. Like UFC filling interim titles quite often, and I think it's not just me, it frustrates the whole fan base, gets frustrated, because, you know, I mean, the champion should hold the belt, not the interim. You fight for the title and that should be it.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, anyway,
Steve, can I just ask before you fire a question up, your nickname? Obviously there's two nicknames now, so I want to know how the USSR title nickname came in, and obviously Drago 2.0, because of your likeness to Drago from the Rocky movies. Was that yourself calling yourself that, or did somebody else give you the nicknames? No, how did that come to be?
It come off the back of just when Mark would get phone calls, my coach, and the just sort of say, have you got that heavyweight ready for sparring, that one that looks like Ivan Drago, and would go to the ABAs, or when we're boxing for England, would travel, and people would be like, it's Ivan Drago, Jesus, Dolph Lundgren, it's Ivan Drago. And it just come to the point where it was normal. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't even getting called Stephen, I wasn't getting called, you know, it would just be like, oh, is Ivan Drago training? No. And when I turned pro, the whole gimmick thing, and listen, you know, Newcastle shorts, Newcastle top, Newcastle walking, great. Oh, right, he's from Newcastle, he walks in with a Newcastle short, black and white shorts, cliche. Right, wow, great. You know, he's a supporter of Newcastle. I mean, I don't have to prove to anybody I'm a supporter of Newcastle, you know. But and the whole USSR thing was, I think it was just a gimmick where we thought, right, you know, we've turned pro now, let's go off the back of the red and yellow, the Ivan Drago shorts. Let's, you know, Rocky wasn't a sensational hit. And I've been called it now for sort of 6 years off within boxing. So we just decided to go along with it and you know, give it a go and see how it went. And it's worked well.
Yeah, but you do look like him though, so you can't get away from that though. right, yeah.
I'm trying to look for a photo of my real dad just to show you I look not like him. Now, where my man must have been at a Comic Con back in 1990.
Where Dolph Lundgren, yeah.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, mate.
There's loads of comments here.
Right, we're going to have to get through these because time constraints. So, yeah, we'll get through all these now. Heels, rules, afternoon, Stu, Chris and Steve. Is Steve planning to take on Wilder? Battle of the knockout artists. Also, serious question, is Steve more technical than people give him credit for? Good question, that, Heels Rules.
Heels Rules, nobody's getting to see my technical side. I've four and a half minutes and three knockouts. It's hard to show a technical side. But if you go back to my first fight, Sean Duffy, everyone said, you know, I think the guy had six, 1-4, lost two, was on the back of beating a 4-0, and you know, people were saying, oh, it's a hard fight to take, and you know, it took us two minutes to stop him, and I boxed, I knocked him down with a jab, and he got back up. I hit him with a 1-2, one to the body, a right up, I cut, and the referee jumped in because he was out on the ropes, and you know, I actually boxed really well on that one, and because it was on an MTK sort of small hall show, people didn't see that. And if you YouTube Stephen Robinson, there's an amateur fight against Delicious Oreo, and it was for the English title. And I had, if you look at me weighing, I weighed in 106 kilo, which is 7 kilo lighter than I was. And I had taken nothing away from Delicious from that fight. I had food poisoning two weeks leading up to that fight, and our Mark wanted to pull us out, and for me, I've never pulled out of a fight. I wouldn't pull out of a fight. And I went down there, and you can watch it. I didn't hold a punch. I was absolutely like fucked mentally, physically. Like I had nothing in it. So anybody that watches that, people will post comments on people, you know, on reviews going, well, just watch him against Delicious Oreo. It was 4.5 years ago. Like,
yeah.
what can you learn in 4.5 years? You know, it's you know, but as I say, I'm actually quite a good boxer. But I'll show that you know, when it comes to it, and I think people will say that I'm good at working on the back foot, I'm good at working on the front foot, and I'm good at working on the inside. And as I say, for me, it's not a hobby, it's a lifestyle. And you know, I spend two times a day every day, which I've done for 7 years, learning the art of boxing. And you know, have I still got a lot to learn? Of course I have. And everybody's got a lot to learn. I remember going down and sparring Anthony Joshua, and you know, Rob McCracken would jump into the ring during the middle of the spar and be telling him what he needs to do. And you think, this is the two-time world champion and Olympic gold medalist, and he's still getting taught how to turn his shots in. So no matter what level you get, you're still learning. You're always learning, like anything, you know, like any sport, you're always learning. You can do everything better. So, you know, but I would like to show people that I'm actually not a big dopey knockout. I'm not actually a bad boxer. And hopefully I'll be able to showcase that in the next show. And but listen, if somebody comes to fight and doesn't go on the back foot and isn't a negative boxer, I think the knockout's going to come regardless.
You've got that great equalizer, Steve, as well, though. So, you know, I mean, you've got that power punch, and you know, not a lot of people have that garnered power in a fist. So, I mean, you can be technical, but if you want to be rough, you use your power, don't you?
That's not,
of course,
Neil, see, you know. Yeah, I think as a fighter, you know when. I mean, you know, as I say, listen, when I get in that ring, it's Valhalla, it's me or him. And yeah. I think, you know, when I caught him with the left hook and the right hook, he sort of stumbles backwards, and obviously I didn't realise that he was knocked out, because as he stumbles backwards, he then stumbles forward. So that's why if you see the fight, I run over because I'm just thinking he's hurt. I'm thinking he's stumbling backwards. So I'm running over to give him a straight right hand. But obviously, you know, he's took two steps back, he's took two steps forward and he's fell. But, you know, you've got that in, you've got to have that instinct. Listen, I'm the nicest kid in the world when it comes to, you know, I'll shake anybody's hand, I'll get a picture with anybody, I'll do anything for anybody. But when I'm in that ring and that, you know, to come Thursday, I was talking to Reese and shook his hand, introduced myself. Come Friday at the weigh-in, I didn't want to talk to him. No disrespect to Reese. Saturday night after the fight, I would have went and had, you know, a pint of soda water in line with him. But, you know, come Friday, that you know, there's no Mr. Nice Guy. And come Saturday, come fight night, as I say, it's Valhalla. It's, you know, it's 300, it's me or him, and that's how that's always my mindset. And I know, unless you're carrying me out of that ring in a stretcher, there's no stopping us.
Good answer, Chris. Any more comments before we close out? Mark Lloyd, hello, frequent viewer for us on the show. Would Steve ever consider doing wrestling? Also, was he ever a fan or a fan now of wrestling? And Lewis Young's asked the same question on Facebook. Do you like wrestling? So yeah, just to encapsulate WWE and, you know, what you liked about WWE, and yeah, considering going into wrestling further down the line.
So my first ever show, it was 1997. It was a bit, funnily enough, I'm meant to be fighting in the arena when my first ever live show was. And we won tickets on the radio to go to the wrestling down at Birmingham and meet and greet. And I remember it was Legion Doom versus the Headbangers for the tag team title, Stone Cold, Bret Hart, Vader, they were all there. And I remember going down and, you know, I got to meet and greet them all and I got photos with everyone. I remember sitting in the arena and just being in awe of everything that was going on and thinking in my head, one day, I want to do this. You know, one day I want to walk down into an arena with thousands of people screaming and chanting and holding signs up. And for me, that meant from that day forward. And then about a year later, I went to my first football game. And it was, funny enough, it was Everton. It was Everton away and it was in 2000. It was Everton at home and it was in the Carling Cup. And you just beat one penalties. And I remember being at St. James's Park thinking, like, you know, 9-year-old thinking that there's 52,000 people on a Tuesday night pissing down with rain, you know, singing, chanting, screaming. And I can remember just thinking, wow, like, this is what I want to do. And I got to do that the other day. And as I said, I live in an £80,000 council house getting picked up off a 200 grand Bentley. Off Sky, and I'm sitting thinking, you know, people, all the kids in the street are getting the photos outside the Bentley. Yeah. And I'm sitting, the Sunday after, I'm sitting watching me Littlewoods telly that I pay 74 quid a month for, watching me sell on Sky Sports, knock someone out. It's still just like so surreal. And every single day I'm pinching myself thinking this is, I'm just a kid from a normal family, a normal background with nothing and never, you know, with a dream, and it's all happening. So, listen, I'd absolutely dream to be part of the wrestling one day, and, you know, and get it. Listen, like Mankind, they can chuck me off the top of the hell of a cell and turn the table. And, you know, as long as I get to be in an arena and be part of the wrestling, I'd absolutely love that. And like I say, regardless whether they use us to smash a 4x2 over my head or throws off a ladder, I couldn't give a shite. As long as it happens, it would be an unbelievable. It would be, as I say, it was a dream. That was my first ever dream at 7-year-old, watching that at the Birmingham NEC, and, you know, thinking one day I want to do that. So to one day do that, it would just be another tick on the bucket list.
What would you call yourself? What would you be your wrestling name? Or knowing Vince, he'd look at you and go, "Oh, Drago, you'll be Russian." You can see
Disney Drago, Disney Drago or something. I just dress as like a Disney princess or something. I just, I, I don't know. I'd have to have a think about that. It's a bit of a on the spot question, but yeah, it's definitely a dream I would love.
Heels rules, and me and Chris are in full agreement with you, Steve. You are too humble, but you're grounded. You can see that, and from talking to you today, which is a great quality to have, you know, in amongst the pizzazz of boxing and everything that goes with it. Brett Thomas, how did you not get the Creed 2 part as his son? How did that happen? Good question, Brett.
We actually applied for it. We applied for it. And funnily enough, they said that they got back. It was Mark, my boxing manager and coach, who applied for it. And I think they'd gotten back and said, oh, we're wanting somebody with a sort of Eastern European accent. And you know, it didn't come off. But and I think Dolph Lundgren wouldn't want us there because he owes us CSA. So if I'd have turned up, I would have been like, listen, I want some money. You've missed all my birthdays and Christmases. You pissed off to the shop 30 odd year ago, and you've never come back. So pay up. So I don't think he wanted us there.
What else have we got for you?
Honest beyond reasonable. Hi all, Steve. I can see beating AJ on his day. High praise indeed there from Honest Beyond Reasonable, Steve. Yeah. High praise indeed. What do you think of that comment, Steve?
Yeah. Listen. That's happened, right?
Yeah.
That's me and AJ there. He played the song as I walked in. Listen. I appreciate that, but like I've just said earlier, listen, I think a lot of people are criticising AJ at the minute, and he's not getting the credit he deserves. He's a gold medalist, a two-time world champion. He's an unbelievable boxer, and people are saying, yeah, but he fought 17 people at the cup. Is the what coming to the end of the career? He fought a Parker, who had recently just been beat. He fought a Povetkin, who was retiring. He fought a Pulev, and you know, Klitschko was retiring. Dillian White was only his fifth fight in. The bloke's an Olympic gold medalist, and you know, he lives and breathes the sport. And you know, did he do the best against Usyk? Was his tactics wrong? Yeah, but I think he knows that. You know, he knows that. And the first fight against Ruiz was just, you know, he had him down. He went in for the kill and he got caught with a daft overhand loop and shot at the top of the head. And he was, you know, and it's heavyweight boxing that can happen. But listen, give AJ the credit he deserves. He's a good boxer, you know, and he's good for the sport. He's, you know, he's giving kids the reason to go get into the sport. And he started off the back of seeing his cousin DeGale win an Olympic medal, and his story's good. And you know, he's a role model. He's a role model to kids. And I don't think he's getting it. Listen, I want to see him come back against Usyk, use his weight, bully him, throw him around. For instance, people sitting criticising my last performance. Was Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder 3 the best fight? Was it? It was shocking from a boxing perspective. But did Tyson Fury do what he needed to do? Bully him, get into his head, hurt him, and just, you know, give everything he's got and just throw him around and manhandle him. Yeah, that's what he done. He got the win. He got the belt. So was Klitschko the best boxer? Smash, grab, jab, grab, hit, 2-1-2, grab. You know, but did he hold the titles for X amount of years? Is he living the best life, you know, on a farm in, you know, Kiev with millions of pounds in his bank? Yeah. So people can sit and call people. And I know that question. I know you were, by the way, mate, I know you were calling Joshua, and I appreciate the fact that, you know, you're saying that. But listen, Joshua's a phenomenal fighter. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time with him down the GB team, and I've sparred with him. You know, and I think the bloke doesn't get the credit he deserves off the back of a couple of losses, and listen, he's over now. Let's see what he can do against Usyk in the rematch.
You know, it becomes
titles back to the UK for
if he becomes a three-time champion as well. What an incredible story! Again, you know, he's I know he's got to go into Usyk's backyard for this rematch, supposedly in February. And just before we move on from that, what do you think about Rob McCracken not training him now, because he's been with him for a number of years through Team GB? Do you think that's the right option, bringing somebody else in to change the way, potentially? What are your thoughts on that before we go?
Definitely. You know, Rob McCracken was asking Anthony Joshua to box a better boxer. And that, you know, he was falling short of the jab. He was jabbing like that. He was pouring. And, you know, that overhand right was catching it as well. Overhand left, because his southpaw was catching him every single time. Because if he had rammed that jab in and held it stiff and then grabbed him, it would have and threw him around. You know, he's a natural 6'7", 17 stone man. That's his natural weight. Usyk's first fight was at light heavy. His first amateur fight was at light heavyweight. So his natural weight, listen, obviously now he's just, you know, he's took shape into his body, and, you know, he's carrying 15 and a half, 16 stone. But a natural 17 and a half stone man should be just absolutely bullying him. And I think Rob McCracken is an unbelievable coach when it comes to boxing, you know, and he was getting Joshua to, you know, try and work on things that wasn't working. And unfortunately, I think off the back of, I don't know if you've seen the IFL TV interview last night, that was an hour long with Joshua. I don't know if you've watched that yet or anybody.
Not yet.
Yeah,
I watched it last night as well.
It's a good one. And I think Joshua, like he says, I'm fucking sick of losing. I'm sick of everything that's going on. And, you know, I know what I need to do. And I think he's doing the right thing. But him and Rob won't fall out. You know, he'll stick with him, and you'll have him there in the corner. And if Rob's any type of real man, he'll appreciate, you know, that he's moving on. He'll be there to help him, and he'll be there to guide him. You know, Mark said to me, If somebody comes in and offers you something that I can't, you know, I'll let you go. And I think anyone as a friend and as a boxing coach will do that. You just want the best for the fighter. And I think Anthony will go away. And I think you'll put on a stone, and I think you'll really, really rough Usyk up, because he knows that's the only way to beat him.
He mentioned a lot in that interview as well. Sorry, Stu.
No, you're all right. Carry on.
Wanting to go out on his shield, didn't he? He said he wants to go out on his shield. He said in that interview yesterday, you know, as well as saying he would be open to train with Tyson Fury as well for the fight, which, you know, I think that's big news as well. I think they both can teach each other a lot of things as well. Not obviously give too much away, because we do want them to come together and fight at some point. But I think he was really honest about himself in that interview.
Definitely. You know, 100%.
And it was good to see. Really refreshing to have Anthony Joshua not play to sort of TV and just actually be Anthony Joshua and be honest about himself.
Yeah. It was, like I say, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And to be honest, I enjoyed the ones with Gary Neville. When they were both sitting talking to Gary Neville on YouTube. Another two great interviews. And if people haven't, you know, watched them, they're another two good watchers. And, you know, I think he knows. Oh, I'm just getting a low battery.
No problem. No problem, Steve.
This might turn off.
Chris, any more comments before we close out with Steve? Because he's busy today with stuff going on.
I know. Yeah.
Just to close out.
I'll give you a football one, Steve.
Hey, right, Dan Terrasportsink again. Is Steve a Newcastle football fan? Also, we know the answer to this. What's he making of the takeover? Now, I wanted to ask you this, but Dan's putting it to you, which is great. Bit of football to close out.
Dan, do you know what it is? Pissing us off, all these people saying that's a disgrace. Newcastle are the richest club in the world. It's this, it's that. It's, you know, you've got politicians. Politicians are bringing it up. Keir Starmer's bringing it up. Listen, and then same dickheads will be the ones buying World Cup tickets and going to Qatar. You know, a place that have got the exact same same beliefs as Saudi, right? But the same people who are sitting calling will be going to Qatar and they'll be buying World Cup tickets. So everybody can piss off and appreciate it with being a shit team, right? With 52,000 people in the championships, still we had the highest attendance ever in a championship. There's still 52,000 people. There's there'll not be a Newcastle fan in the world, says the late Mike Ashley, but we're still sold out. Every single ticket, there's still 60,000 people waiting for a season ticket year in, year out, right? And we've done this with no glory for 58 years, okay? So now, we've become the richest club in the world, and I think we deserve the fact that we're an unbelievable supporting team. You know, I think we are really, really, we just love our club. And that's not just football. You know, 3,500 people go to the basketball. They had to make a basketball arena because they were selling. They were too big at the local university. There was only 800 tickets, so they had to go and make a 3,500 seater. They had to go and make a new ice rink for Whitley Bay, you know, because there was too many people wanting tickets to the game. So you've got basketball, you've got ice hockey, sports that you know, Newcastle are such an... And look at the arena the other day. There was 11,000 people at the arena, there for boxing. And, no matter what, I can guarantee 52,000 people, if Savannah Marshall and Clarissa Shields end up fighting for a title in a year's time, that'll happen at St. James's Park, and there'll be 52,000 people there. You know, we're a very, very proud, loyal... It's a beautiful city. And, I think we deserve what's happening to our really do. Off the back of all the shit that we've had, we'll make, actually, I think we deserve this.
What a city in general. Yes, yeah. They don't come more bigger for passion in world sports than up there up in the north on the Toon, mate. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. Because there's too many people saying that we don't deserve it and it's a disgrace. And it's...
What would the other clubs be doing? If Everton had the buyout for the amount of money they're worth, who's gonna turn it down? Who's not gonna love the fact that you could be dominant in another couple of years?
Yeah, but we're not dominant, Stuart. We had all that money and we spent it on shit.
But when you look at what Usmanov and Mashiri are worth, and then you look at the Saudi takeover, it's just next level how much they're worth. It's crazy. Yes. But then FFP lads. It's going to be the financial fair play then, isn't it?
But it's beautiful because we've not because Mike Ashley, the dickhead, hasn't spent any money and we've been constantly in profit. We're allowed to spend 700 million. That's the FFP. So,
right, okay.
I've seen that.
Listen, why don't we bring Townsend back? You say
No, you're not having him back.
You can have him back, but it's going to...
We'll have them both.
No, you're not. It will come to you.
You can have him. Fantastic. Chris, anything else before we get Steve to plug his socials, like Instagram, where people can find him before we go?
Brett's got one final one there.
There you go. Brett, there you are, Steve. Thank you. Thanks, Steve. You've been a great guest.
I put that in here at the end as well.
Andy likes the pulls. So, yeah, you've got a new follower.
Did you see the Mike Tyson interview the other day when he was, look, my wife loved them people, man. The beautiful wet beaches, man. I fucking love them. I was just sitting, the bloke, Mike Tyson, he's just a little stoner now and just loves life, doesn't he? It's unbelievable. Everything I watch about him, I just sit and smile from start to finish. He's just, he's found God. He's found the sort of ritual side of life. He's sitting licking toads and smoking trees and he's a new man.
and he will be fighting Logan Paul in February, so...
Oh, but I look forward to that. I really will.
Steve, where can the viewers find you? I know you're on Instagram, so where can they find you, mate, and follow your quest as you go up from 4-0?
I'm only on Instagram and it's Steven Robinson _USSR, and I appreciate all the following. I appreciate the support of everybody. I appreciate you guys having us on. Everybody who's watching live now, commenting. Like I say, I'm just a normal kid from a council house, and this is everything that's happening in my life is just surreal, and You know, as I said earlier, I'm a big believer. Anybody can do anything with the right mindset and the right people around them. So anybody who is watching, who wants, you know, who's got kids who are suffering at school or suffering, you know, or uses is people watching. If you know, if there is a job you want, or there is a sports team you want to go and join, or there is a club you want to join, or a gym, just do it, because you know there's too many people live life and with too many regrets. In 10-year time, you become too old. And listen, like I say, just everybody who's watching, everybody who's, you know, supporting, just go and do something with yourself, and you won't regret it. And you know, give it a try, no matter what it is, and you know, give it your all, and it'll work out. It'll work out for you.
Fantastic. Great viewpoints there. Good. You know, the youngsters will take a lot from that. Absolutely. And yeah, thank you very much, Steve.
Thank
USSR
you.
Robinson Drago 2.0. We've got to get that in as well for coming on for a special fighter focus. And we look forward to seeing what's coming up with you with Boxer, hopefully November and December. Yeah. And we'll get you back on pre-fight.
It's been a pleasure. And thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for coming on, mate. Thank you very
much. Absolute star, mate. We look up to you, mate. Absolutely.
Lovely.
Thank you, mate.
Thank you very much. Take care, everybody watching.
And
thank you for watching as well.
Take care, mate.
Bye-bye.
See you, mate.
Absolutely fantastic there. And we will be back at 3 p.m. for the latest for UFC 267. Chris
it's
has been waiting.
267 heavy this week.
And then the following week as well, Chris, which you've been waiting for, you know, 268 back to back. You've been waiting for this. But yeah, just to go back to Steve Robinson there, what a fantastic insight
into
his career. It was good talking about the football there, WWE, wasn't it, Chris? Really enjoyed that. It's fantastic. What a guy.
It's an inspiration, you know, been talking about, you know, going off and doing things that, you know, you want to do. This is what we started the show is. We want to do the show. And I find it's really inspiring. Because obviously we don't get told we can't do it, but we do this because we love the sport. And it's like, you know, it's good to have that inspiration from the guy as well.
Absolutely. So, yes, we will be back. It will be episode 36 because we've just done 35 as a special fighter focus. So, yeah, thank you for all your comments for Steve as well. And as we said, pre-fight, they're looking at scheduling him for November or December, Boxer. So we will try and get him back on, won't we, Chris, before the fight happens.
Yeah, 100% we will. Yeah.
Okie dokie. See you all at 3 o'clock across Facebook and YouTube and podcast form, hopefully by tomorrow for both episodes.
Right. We'll see you in a few short hours.
Sports Social Podcast Network.